Hi, this is John Jenkins, senior editor of deallawyers.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's podcast. On November 8th, I blogged about a recent survey of 300 in-house lawyers at private equity and venture capital firms that inquired about various aspects of their efforts to control their spending on outside counsel. Our guest today is Nicholas Dademar. He is the CEO of Aperio, the company that conducted that survey, and I'd like to welcome Nino to the podcast today and kick things off by asking him to tell us a little bit about his background and about the services the company provides.
Perfect. Well, first of all, John, thank you very much for having me. I suppose good morning to you as we record this, and good afternoon to me as I'm over in London at the moment. But yeah, so, you know, my background, I was a private practice lawyer for just over 5 years, working for a large international firm and worked in various different countries. Then went in-house for a bit, for about a year and a half, and then went and did an MBA and did the MBA, a very expensive one, I might add, but did that to essentially change career. I was interested in what the clients of mine when I was a lawyer were doing, and maybe a little bit less so in the kind of legal advice side of it. So after completing an MBA, went into private equity and was an investment manager for a renewable energy private equity fund in Europe. And so I kind of had that slightly unique perspective of having worked, you know, in private practice, in-house, and then also inside a fund as an investor and dealing with lawyers on a very regular basis. And I think for me, the kind of, you know, and eventually went on to found this business called Aperio, which is a bit about what we'll, you know, talk about some of the surveys that we've done. But, you know, the little bit of the spark to found Aperio was whilst I was in private equity. You know, we had a pretty consistent theme where we would instruct lawyers at the outset of a matter. They would give us an estimate for, you know, 300K or whatever it may be. And then we'd be head down doing the work, and you know, just after we completed or around about that time, we get a phone call from the lawyer saying, I know we said 300, but we've got a million on the clock and we're still going. And that, you know, that used to cause all kinds of problems for us. And that kind of, you know, lack of visibility, if you like, was something that was repeated on pretty much every matter across the fund that I was working in at the time. And so that was the beginnings of Aperio. The very, very quick piece on Aperio. We're a B2B SaaS platform. And, you know, the problem that we set out to solve was that, you know, in-house legal team has very little visibility of their legal spend data and next to no automation of the kind of processes to gather that data and invoices. It's normally siloed within the law firms that they work with, and there's not a kind of single view of what's happening that's up to date. And, you know, what the platform does, we provide visibility of live legal spend data to the general counsel's office and subsequently legal teams, deal teams, CFOs, et cetera. But we provide that live legal spend ahead of the invoice. And we do that by automating the collection of live time recording data from law firms that our clients work with. And so that means the teams can spend time on you know, focusing on spend management without any surprises and streamline things like invoice approvals, and then look at fun stuff like trends and analysis on their legal spend data.
As a former law partner, that sounds terrifying, but it also, well, sounds extremely useful.
I was going to say, we do have some law firms, very confusingly, we have several law firms that have bought the product themselves, namely because they're normally trying to provide some variant of this data to their clients on a manual basis, and we can automate it. And I would say as well, on the law firm side, it doesn't have to be live. They can, there's various elements to mitigate the obvious concerns, which I could see your kind of, you know, your brow furrowing when you were like, live data. They can have delays on it. They can hide the narratives on things. There's various things to do to make sure the partners are comfortable.
Great. Well, in any event, we recently blogged about your survey of private equity and venture capital firms, as I mentioned in the intro, and their views on legal spending. Can you provide us with an overview of that survey and some of the key takeaways from it?
Yeah, sure. So this has become a bit of an annual tradition for us, the kind of producing a kind of spend report and seeing kind of key trends in the market that we all operate in. And so this year was no different. If anything, I think the survey is getting bigger each year. And we commissioned with an independent organization called Coleman Parks, who conduct the survey on our behalf. And I think they reached out to about 300 lawyers that work for private equity and venture capital firms. And it's heavily weighted towards private equity. I think it's roughly 80% in the private equity and 20% venture capital. And that's across the US, which is roughly 2/3, in the UK, which represents about 1/3 of respondents. So it's kind of, you know, private equity, venture capital, North America, US, that's who we're kind of talking to, senior in-house lawyers. It's a longer document, so I'll try and kind of summarize what I thought were the kind of, you know, to, if I could keep the rule of three and try and kind of highlight three things. One that is perhaps not so surprising in some respects, but it's interesting to see nonetheless, which is legal costs are growing. They're growing as they did last year, and they're going to grow again this year. But this time, I think so is the pressure to control costs. You know, that growth in legal costs is coming from things like inflation, is coming from increased regulatory pressure, obviously some of the annual rate increases. I think the one difference in kind of some of the almost sloganism we've heard in the past, and you do more with less, it's not that anymore. It's not do more with less. It means get more value of what you do have. So kind of get more with the same, I think maybe is a less eloquent way of that's why I don't work in advertising. But that's the kind of first point. The second point, which is interesting for me, is that one of those sources of pressure from a scrutiny perspective is LPs. So again, I think it's just over 80% of respondents said that the LPs are now scrutinizing legal expenses. And so for me, when I was back, and this is going on a bit, when I was back in private equity, LPs were kept quite far away from the kind of the minutiae to a certain extent of operating costs. The world has changed in the last 10 years or so quite a bit. First of all, there's a ton more capital chasing the same deals. There's just a lot more private equity funds, full stop. And so as returns get squeezed, as the market turns, everything else, people start to look to make sure that you're operationally efficient. So, you know, LPs, investors need to be accountable to their LPs on things like this now as well. And then the final thing, which is sort of get on my high horse a bit about this, but I've had a sort of gut feel on this one for a number of years. And this is that fixed fees are not the panacea, you know, to kind of solve all ills. That fixed fees basically are not always fixed. And they're often one of like the top cost control measures. For me, and finally seeing this in the data, the kind of the big thing there was, I think it's almost 3/4 of respondents said that fixed fees exceed the agreed price the majority of time. And so that was quite an eye opener, because if you're relying purely on a fixed fee, I mean, I can get into a whole host of other things why fixed fees can cause other issues in terms of what's the kind of team on the law firm side and everything else. And I'll also say that sometimes fixed fees are perfect, especially for highly commoditized work. But fixed fees sometimes are a bit of a square peg in a round hole. And seeing that data to say 3/4 of respondents say that fixed fees are kind of often going over budget is, for me, was probably the most eye-opening of all the facts.
That struck me very much as an eye-opener as well. One other thing that I thought was very interesting in the survey was how the organizational structure of private equity and venture capital firms influenced the in-house counsel's ability to control their legal spending. Can you touch on that topic and some of the changes that might help in-house lawyers better control spending?
Yeah, it's a good question. And actually, one of the themes from last year's report that we did, it talked about we refer to it as the trilateral relationship, but effectively it was the relationship between, you know, legal teams, so inside private equity funds, the relationship between legal teams, deal teams, and finance teams. And, you know, it's deal teams typically, certainly on a deal basis, who are the ones, not always, but typically the ones instructing law firms. And you know, they understandably want to move fast, particularly on competitive deals, and kind of get going. The trouble with that is it sometimes leaves the legal departments kind of out of the loop and not realizing when lawyers have been instructed or how they've been instructed or what they've been instructed on. And it was one of the pieces in the survey. It was sort of, I think, just over 80% of the respondents said that matters within their organizations, bearing in mind these are senior legal respondents, matters in their organization are initiated without their knowledge. There are certain times and places where that's absolutely fine. I think where lawyers are eventually going to get involved and or have to manage the law firm relationship at a relationship level and or deal with kind of cost overruns, to not know about it or to find out about it when an invoice lands and finance say, what's this, is not an effective way or an efficient way of kind of managing, you know, legal budgets across a firm. So I think there's a bit of a, you know, a structural issue inside. It's not unsolvable at all, and I'll kind of get onto that. But the structure of funds lends itself to that kind of slight blind spot for the lawyers at times. And actually, we asked an open-ended question. This is something we didn't actually include, you know, in the survey itself. But it was we asked the question, how to the respondents who said that this is one of the things they have, where they're blindsided by kind of spend they didn't know about. You know, how do you find out about this? And I think that was it. It was like the answers were they find out when they get an invoice. So imagine just suddenly getting an invoice, you know, that you had no clue about, or they learn about it from investors themselves. But fundamentally, it just puts the in-house lawyers in such a difficult position, because you can't, how can you manage a budget if you don't know something exists? Like, it's just a sort of a non sequitur in that respect. So in terms of what do you do about it, you know, ideally you're centralizing legal spend through the legal department. I think you have to be cognizant of the fact that deal teams have a lot of these relationships with the law firms and respect that. And so I think if it can't be funneled directly through the legal department, at least have some kind of formal process for budgeting for new legal work. You know, and obviously legal then has a process, has a role in that process. And obviously, without sounding like an infomercial, this is part of exactly what we do, you know, and try and solve. If you think about the way we operate, is we're always on and in the background. And so if a deal team instructed but never told the law firm, because of the way our system works, it would then appear in the system the next day. They, you know, the deal team, they're not going to engage with a perio to instruct. It's, you know, so they're just going to pick up the phone, call their partner who did the last deal, start working on it. The moment that law firm and or partner and or deal team start working on it, it would appear in a perio. And so it's a kind of shadow spend, which we hear about, not just in private equity, actually, we hear about it in other industries as well. That is kind of exactly what we do. Because we have we expose is the wrong word in some respects, but because we bring to light the cruel data, or the WIP as we call it in the UK, you're not waiting for an invoice, you're waiting for that first time entry, and then you know about it.
What are these firms currently doing to hold down legal costs? What techniques are being used right now?
Yeah, so there are a number of techniques. And techniques almost makes it sound too scientific. I think it's sometimes a little bit more art than science here, but there's a number of techniques used by funds to try and control costs, you know, ranging from, you know, the largest one, I think, which is just over half respondents talk about some form of AFAs. So kind of fixed capped fees, et cetera. But going from there all the way to, you know, internally having a retrospective analysis of matters and spend, or indeed outsourcing invoice reviews and things like that to third parties. And kind of another stat that came out of the report was 3/4 of respondents said that they are surprised by the size of law firm bills, and not in a good way. And so, you know, again, this is a piece that didn't make the report, but we asked these respondents that said that they're kind of surprised, you know, how do you deal with this situation? So this is what do you want to call it? This is a maybe it's a scoop. I don't know if this is going to make the front page of every paper, but no one knows about this yet until now. So when we asked the respondents how they deal with the situation, they said, number one, negotiate discounts. That was about half, I think. Challenging line items, individual line items, but less than half, about 40% or so. Going to external bill reviewers, delaying payment, kind of sit on it until year end when you kind of then, you know, that I'm sure you had many of those being on the other side of it. And
this may be a scoop, but I've been on the receiving end of many of these over the years.
I was going to say, is this sort of the ghost of Christmas past? It's like delay payment, reject the invoice, refuse payment. You know, but those are the pretty blunt. That's why I say these are not techniques. These are kind of these are kind of some of the what happens. I think what struck me about that was that all of these techniques, again, I use that in inverted quotes, but all of these techniques are essentially reactive to something that's happened. None of it is proactive. None of it is kind of spend management. It's what we would refer to as kind of invoice management. You can't retrospectively, you know, change the present or the past, if you like. And so the kind of, it requires an invoice to then trigger an action. And so in that respect, the you know, the in-house legal teams are always behind the curve when it comes to kind of getting a handle on costs. And that's obviously, like, that's bad for our focus very much on the in-house side and how that's bad for them. But that's also bad for law firms. And again, if I go back to my own experience of having worked in kind of the three environments of private practice, in-house, and obviously then on the kind of deal side, law firms were not out, you know, having been there, there's not kind of nefarious reasons why they're doing this. They're busy, and not all lawyers are created equal when it comes to managing client expectations on bills, on that sort of thing. So kind of not having visibility of a bill and being surprised about the size of a bill, or maybe you knew a bill was coming, but you didn't know what the size was. And when that thing is, like my example when I was in private equity, was 2 times, 3 times what we were expecting, that's a bad outcome for everyone. It's a bad outcome for the investment committee. It's a bad outcome for me as a sort of deal doer with a partner in charge. It's definitely a bad outcome for the client relationship partner, because they're going to end up taking a haircut and writing off, you know, a bunch of time that they spent on this. So it's a bit of a lose-lose if you're being purely reactive to the situation.
I think that's a nice segue into my next question, which, you know, as someone who has come from the law firm side and spent 3 decades nearly as a law firm partner, I thought the responses to your survey had a lot of insights into what law firms should be doing and shouldn't be doing if they want a good relationship with their private equity and venture capital legal colleagues. And I think you've also identified some own goals in there that law firms seem to do. I wonder if you can comment on that for us.
Yeah, so, you know, the whole legal industry itself talks a lot about transparency, but when you get down into the kind of brass tacks of it, I think law firms are often, well, they're not always proactively giving this data, but to put it mildly. And I think that they're hesitant to provide that data because they're worried that it's going to invite more questions. Or, you know, if you're a client relationship partner and you're doing pretty well, do you really want to kind of mess with the status quo? Now, I would obviously argue there has been for some time a growing change in the market, and transparency is very much no longer a kind of nice to have. It's a bit of a kind of, it's a prerequisite now. And I think, so again, law firms are worried that it's going to invite more questions about fees. And they also are probably acutely aware that, and this is not all law firms, but many law firms have pretty old internal technology. You know, some, if you take the time and billing systems, you know, the two of the leading time billing systems are over 20 years old. You know, I'm sure on your computer and mine, there's not much, and you can't say Microsoft Word because that doesn't count because it gets updated all the time. But we're not using tech.
Excel,
yeah, exactly. I've still got my typewriter somewhere, but yeah, no. So we're kind of, the tech that we use has moved with the times. A lot of times internally within law firms, it hasn't, for a variety of reasons, some of them very valid. And when you combine that with maybe a lack of kind of processes that are not necessarily up to scratch as well, then that kind of adds to this fear that bringing transparency is going to create more problems. And I think, you know, in addition to everything that came out in the survey, I spend probably every week I'll talk to at least one of our customers. And often it's more than a single customer in a week. And I do that for a number of reasons, but I want to know kind of what they're thinking and not be too far away from the actual end users of our product. And it's kind of nothing to do with the product as such, but our customers are not, and this is repeatedly stated, kind of verbatim, we don't want to nickel and dime our law firms. I'm sure there are some out there that absolutely do want to nickel and dime the law firms, but for the overwhelming majority of our customers say, we don't want to nickel and dime our law firms. What we want is visibility. And what we want is that 10,000 foot view to answer really simple questions about, like, what did I spend last year? Which is the most basic of all questions, but most of our people we speak to can't answer that. And then you get into, okay, you know, go back to the law firm experience of it. What did I spend with said law firm? Then you can get into the, what did we spend it on? Who did we work with? And you can get into the kind of the advanced class of stuff. You know, I think private capital firms, private equity, I think they're particularly concerned with transparency rather than cost. I think they particularly value the relationships with the law firms and even more so with the individual partners. And I think in the survey itself, we kind of pressure tested some of that that kind of hypothesis. And, you know, the kind of the orders of priority were you know, the bottom of the stack rank was lower fees. The kind of top of the stack rank was, you know, timely fees, transparency, that was 55%, predictability, just under 50%. And this is all to do with invoices from the law firms. And, you know, so timely bills are twice as important as lower legal fees to the clients. So, you know, in other words, private equity is willing to pay for good counsel. What they don't like is surprises. And therefore, you know, transparency is a real advantage for law firms. It shouldn't be something that's feared. It should be something that's embraced by law firms to both service the client and potentially differentiate themselves from their peers.
Great. Well, that's a lot of great insights from the survey and from you, Nino, for folks on both sides of the table, law firm and the in-house side of the equation. Before we sign off, I would like to mention again that I blogged about the survey on November 8th, and I included a link to the survey's download page. So please check out the survey, download it yourself. A lot of interesting data we haven't touched on in there. And I think it's an eye opener, as I hope this podcast has been for everyone. I wanna thank Nino very much for participating today, taking the time to discuss the survey with us. And thanks to everyone for listening.